My name is Casey Andra. I'm 48 years old. Today's date is February 15th, 2023. And I am in Bentonville, Arkansas. And I'm here with my one small step partner, Emily.
Hi, Casey. My name is Emily Taylor. I am 28 years old. Today's date is February 15th, 2023. I am in Wichita, Kansas, and I'm here with my one small step partner, Casey.
Emily was born and raised in Wichita. She's married and has a 6-month-old daughter. She works as an architect in a large design build construction firm and spends free time coaching competitive youth softball. She grew up in a middle-class, semi-conservative Christian family, and her worldview was shaped most prominently in her early 20s as she entered adulthood, went to college out of state, traveled and lived abroad, moved back home, got married, and began to build a stable family life.
Casey grew up in Branson, Missouri with her mom and brother. Casey is the mother of 4 children, ages 14 to 23. Casey grew up distanced from her dad and extended family spread out along the East Coast from New York to the Carolinas and on down to Florida. Feeling lonely and separated from her people, Casey couldn't wait to be a mom and start a big family, and is now so surrounded with her loved ones that her home feels like Disneyland, the happiest place on earth. So Casey, why did you want to participate in One Small Step?
Really, I just like to challenge myself to do new things and try things I've never done before. And this was something I was introduced to by a friend and thought that would be really fun to do. How about you, Emily? Why did you want to participate in One Small Step?
So one of the leaders of my company did it and just said that it was an incredible experience. He was really blown away, and I consider him, you know, very thoughtful, respectful, like connects well with people, and thought it would be a cool opportunity. And I liked the premise that they tried to pair you with somebody different than you, except the first partner that I got assigned ended up being like somebody I work with and as a close friend. I was like, oh, we're not very. So I already am kind of starting with this idea that like, even if we're different, we're not that different.
Okay.
So excited to learn about you today.
Yes, you too.
So would you want to start telling me about your family and like what that means to you? I thought your bio was interesting, that's what it was all about.
I had forgotten I wrote that. So yes, when I was about 10, my little sister was born, and she just became the love of my life and brought me so much joy that I just knew that I could not wait to have a family. And that so as it evolved, I had 4 kids, and so a family of 6. And so for about from 2000 to 2006 or 1999 to 2006, sorry, I stayed home and left work, stayed home, raised the kids. And I have since gone back into the classroom as a teacher. And as I look back on my life, that those moments being at home with them was probably just the number one most important decision I ever made. And it has really affected the outcome of my life and my happiness, and just watching these 4 humans grow up into people that I just enjoy spending time with. And that's why I said that has just made, I would rather spend time with my kids hanging out with them than go on a vacation to Disneyland, really. But yes, it was lonely when I was little. I was estranged, it felt like, from my entire family. And I just couldn't wait to have that all around me when I got older.
So tell me about your, like, growing up family.
Really, it was I was raised by a single mom, and me and my brother were 3 years apart. And so she was great. She gave me a lot of freedom, and I didn't abuse it. I really veered towards friends who had that stable family life that I wanted. And so a lot of that helped form, I mean, because of that traditional family values, I was sort of just moved towards those Christian values. And I realized, you know, if I want that traditional family, I'm gonna pursue this. And so in junior high, I started pursuing staying the night with friends that would take me to church the next morning. And somehow that seemed to fill a very big void. And that just really helped me grow. And I also, it gave me a group as I got older, got into junior high and high school. I needed a group, and that gave me a good fellowship, good community. But in your bio, you mentioned that you have a daughter. But that's also awesome that you're an architect. I think that's really cool. Is this something that you get to do full-time or part-time, or is it flexible?
So I just went through the whole, what do you do? And I was also raised by a single mom for most of my life, but she was like, one of the suggested questions was like, who's your hero? Or you're in, I was like, it's my mom. I mean, every time anybody asked that, it was her. Cause I mean, she's like the president of an all mostly male company still now. She was at every sporting event, I look back now as a mom myself reflecting, like trying to compare, I'm like, I don't know how she did all of this and still made us feel so cared for and loved and like is still this amazing career woman. But I never thought that I would want to leave work. And then my kid showed up and I'm like, this is amazing. I'm right in the middle of that tension of like coming back to work and being really refreshed of like, oh wait, I do love my job, but I also love my kid so much, and like trying to figure out how to really fill both of those things that I care about so much. And I'm surrounded by a lot of people, or like almost everybody else in my family, mom stays home. And so I feel like a little bit of an outlier in that sense of like, that I'm a mom that now went back to work and leave your kid at daycare. So that's all the things that I'm kind of wrestling with like right now. So I did think that was interesting that was like a big forming factor in your life too, even if it kind of takes us, like if we ended up choosing different ways to like different ways to go with that.
Yeah.
So how long did you teach before you had kids? And then...
Well, I taught 2 years. I teach art. And when I started out, I taught kindergarten art. And I lasted 2 years. And then I decided, you know what, this would be a great time to resign and start a family, because it was exhausting. And I'm glad I did. It was great. I was young when I started my family. And I still feel like now they're in their teens and 20s. And I feel like I'm young enough that I get to enjoy the things that they like, as far as, you know, hiking and biking, things like that. In the area where we are in Bentonville, Arkansas, it's just a mountain biking mecca. And so they're so interested in that. And I am too. So I still get to enjoy those things with them. And that's one thing I love about having been a young mom. But if teaching had been more flexible, I would have loved to remain in the classroom and, you know, somehow be a mom. I kind of envied people who had careers as nurses or other careers where you could either work remotely or work a night shift and somehow keep your job and do that. It was difficult getting back into the classroom. But what I did in that time period was it really stretched me too, because I needed to have some kind of spending money. And so I started a mural business, which, you know, as soon as the wall stickers came out, it was done, but that was great. I was done too. I did like 8 years of murals, and I didn't want to paint one more nursery, no more kids' names. I was just done. And so I was really kind of happy when the Wallies came out and all the Cricut machines and all their stickers. So,
yes.
But anyway, that got me through that period. And I still felt like I was using my talents and gifts, and also earning a little money, and I could work it around my schedule. And so that was a help. So I was definitely still working, but I was still kind of doing what I love to.
Do you feel like other people or like your community put expectations on you of how you should be a mom or how you should be a career? Like how does what you actually did compare to what you thought other people expected of you?
A little bit. When I was when my kids were young, I was involved in MOPS, which stands for Mothers of Preschoolers. And I had a great group of friends and a great community with them. But I did feel like as I grew out of that and went back to work, some of those moms were not. They were still stay-at-home moms, even when their kids were in their teen years. And I went on back to work. I felt like my schedule was more rushed and hurried and busy. My house wasn't as clean. I didn't have gourmet meals, and I didn't spend a lot of time on shopping for the perfect outfit. So I felt like I was a little more chaotic than my other friends, and I didn't have time for the you know, Bible studies and small groups and things like that. But, you know, I got bits and pieces of that where I could. And one thing I did is I tried to overlap as much stuff as possible. So if my kids were in church or they were doing a fellowship group, I tried to find one at the exact same time and just get a little bit of, you know, a little bit feed my soul, you know, help me through. Mm-hmm. And then as far as my summers, if they wanted to go on a mission trip, well, I would volunteer to chaperone that and just, And it wasn't like they were like, oh, mom, please don't come. You know, we were fine. I gave them their space and respect that who they are. So I was just kind of chill parent. But I enjoyed having those experiences too. It wasn't a trip to the beach, but it was still a really cool experience with my kids.
Yeah. I have like the mom career, do it all. I have that, and then the rest of my family's kind of a woman's role is in the home. Like, you should, like, no one says this to you, but the whole, you're abandoning your child for someone else to raise them. And then I work in a company that's like 95% dudes, and a lot of them have bigger families, but mostly wives that stay at home. Or so being like the only lady that, you know, to try to balance the little, you know, having a small kid and then being at work, and like that, if they need something, the wife takes care of it. I'm like, no, I'm the wife, but I'm here. So trying to like, how moms fit in the world has, that's just been how it's spinning in my head for the last year, obviously.
So. It's definitely the hardest thing in the world, I think.
Yeah. Because I don't think you'll ever do it right by anybody's standard. Like your description of chaos, and like, I think some people describe my life as chaos, and then other people are like, wow, you look so, everything just looks so calm and settled. Like, man, that just says there's no like right path to carve.
Yes. Well, I am super excited about your career path. I think that's really awesome that you're an architect, because that takes a lot of schooling and talent. And I'm assuming most of it is well, you're 20 years younger than me, but when I was in college, everything was by hand on paper, one mistake. So are you doing more digital stuff?
Yeah, it's they still do. They still give you that kind of back in my day, you got to learn it the old way in school, but everything's done digitally now. We still, there's a little bit of art involved. Like I'm probably somebody who draws more than most other architects, like just as a way to process ideas. It just goes way faster, you know, if you can draw something out and keep it if it's good or throw it away and start over if it's bad. Like I also think the kind of, I don't know what kind of, I mean, you said mural work, but I don't know what your thoughts about art, like if you have any kind of like art has shaped who I am as a person in this way, but I, being a designer, this kind of like iterative process, you're never done. Everything can always be better. If you just have more time or one more pass, I really see myself applying that to everything in my whole life.
Yeah.
Which is sometimes good, sometimes stresses people out. I was curious if like if you as an artist, like how being an artist, you see that showing up in other parts of your life?
Probably so. Now, like currently, I do less of the painting and I'm doing more of the marketing side of things, digital work and flyers and business cards for people who have businesses and just need something on the side. So I haven't done a lot of my own stuff on paper. It's just mostly digital. And that's, I think that's fine for me. It's a creative outlet. And as long as I get to create something, and I enjoy that. But that is interesting what you mentioned about being kind of like percentage wise men to women in your workplace. In my workplace, it's like 90% women, maybe a couple men. So that's really interesting. How do you feel like you fit into the environment? How has that kind of affected you?
I feel like a trailblazer. I don't, and not in the like, oh, badge of honor, but in like the person who has to cut down all the trees and the get stuff out of the way and just like, because somebody else hasn't done it before you yet. It's tiring. I think some of it's like I grew up for most of my life. I mean, other than being female, I'm not a minority. Like I don't see discrimination in the world. Like people, I receive a lot of benefits of just people deferring to me or trusting me or, you know, growing up well off enough, like all of these things that just fine because of who I am. And now who I am innately in the workplace feels like a battle. And it's helped me relate a lot better or to understand like how people of color or people who don't speak English as a first language or people who move to a new country, like people who have other layers of kind of like minority status, how they feel in the whole world. Yeah. Because this is like a little microcosm where I'm this weird, and I'm a designer in a construction company. So there's another layer too of like, we've been doing one thing for a long time and now all these crazy artists want to come in and like, you know, there's just kind of, and now I'm a woman and a mom. And so there's these sort of layers of minority that have, it's been stressful. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I listen to podcasts and read books. Like I would say most of the people around me, like my friends, my family, mostly white middle-class people, but you know, it's, with the stories that I seek out from others, like now I feel like I can feel a little bit of what they're feeling. And it's stressful. And mine, I know mine's like this tiny, the tiny blip of an example compared to the other bigger struggles with discrimination in the world. But I may be more empathetic and resilient, I'm sure. Like, so, I mean, I'm sure that's a like a lifelong character trait that'll come from it, but it's my compassion has extended a lot to people who like don't fit whatever the mold or the expected kind of standard is for demographics or lifestyle.
Well, I think that's super interesting. You mentioned that you have traveled abroad or did school abroad. I mean, I know when I'm traveling, that is probably the only time when I feel that minority or I feel that discomfort. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. And also, you know, being a teacher for so long and it being primarily females, that's why I love traveling. It absolutely broadens my mind, broadens my horizons, like gives me new perspectives and just seeing the way different people live. You're not the one that has all the answers, and you have to rely on people for help. But so where was it that you did your travels?
I've done some other personal travel, but I spent a whole term, a whole semester in Costa Rica and a whole semester in Spain. And the societally very different, I mean, people think about the cultural pieces, the food and the language and the weather and what people wear, those are the, what smacks you in the face. But when you have to be there for a long time, the stuff that rises to the top is how people feel about women or their roles in society, or, you know, what role money has in our lives, or are taxes good or bad? There's the military, good or bad. Like, Costa Rica has no standing military whatsoever. The police force is almost non-existent, and that works for them. And Spain has completely government subsidized healthcare and all, the governmental structures of society, when you stay there for a long time, those are the things that you start to feel, and you're maybe there are other ways that it could, if you grow up in the US your whole life, you think this is how it's supposed to be, you know, greatest country in the world, and you go other places and you're wait, it works other ways.
Yeah.
So when I say my bio thing about my worldview shaped mostly by that is, because you go and you see, other people live very differently from me, and it's fine or better or happier. There are other, other systems that work better for people. But turning over that, the way that we do it is best. Once you get past that, you're oh crap, now I have to, have to figure out what would be the right way.
Yeah. Well, if you could be an expat anywhere in your later years, what country would you choose?
Costa Rica is amazing. I mean, okay. The whole just the casualness, the slowness. That doesn't resonate with me very well. No one would describe me as casual or slow. So I think some of that's a function of how I grew up and what, how American society works. If you're going to be a career lady, no, you're going to be the boss. It's not just, be there and make money and take care of your family. Even if other people don't tell you that, I grew up learning to be very competitive. But there's something about kind of the casual, just the slower pace, expecting less, needing less, not needing to achieve something all the time, that is really refreshing. It's uncomfortable, but after you sit in it for a while, you're like, oh yeah, this is kind of nice. Yeah, we should consider that. And I do think that has shaped a lot of my political views, just to say, oh man, this a lot of people call it the American dream, but it feels like a rat race. Some of our structures that contribute to this rat race thing, those could be changed if we wanted to.
Yeah, I agree.
What about your upbringing or like moving into like being really committed to your faith has shaped your political views?
Well, that's interesting. I guess I would say that I feel like the backbone of our country would be our families, and that strong family unit is going to be the basis for good education, just those traditional family values. And so as an educator, you see a lot and you can see the product of a lot of environments, and you can also see the absence of a really good environment. And so it's painful to see, and it's hard to watch kids going through as much as they do. So, I mean, to me, just a political system that backs the family supports, I always thought it would be awesome, like support somehow those moms staying home and doing some kind of incentive for that, for people who want to raise their kids and, you know, give them those traditional values. I most recently was impressed with the Prime Minister of Italy and Giorgia Meloni and her political views. And I was shocked that our country called her fascist and so right wing and all that. And I thought, well, her main stand is traditional family values and Christian values. And so I'm like, I don't know what's so weird about that. Our country was based on that. It was our founding fathers. It was, you know, that was their political views as well. And now I feel like my kind of belief system is seen as extreme or so right wing or MAGA or whatever those terms are, terrorists, or, you know, it's just very odd to me to see where our culture is going right now. Where I thought, you know, United States, I visited China, and I was with about 40 other teachers at the time, and we were all teaching over there in China, and it was so bizarre. I knew that many of the people I was with were not believers, but just the fact that we were from the United States, the Chinese were just, they assumed that we all had faith in God, and they could not wait to talk to us about our faith. It was very interesting, and I just knew that a lot of people were very uncomfortable in that situation. But so even other cultures see us as a country that's founded on Christian principles, but our world right now does not reflect that. So I don't know. I guess I'm moving to Italy. I don't know. But
I think the feedback I've gotten the most, and I was, what year? I want to say it was the year Trump was running for office, was when I was in Spain. So of course you're the token American and people ask you the questions of what you think about this. And the response that I, or kind of the vibe I got from most people was kind of that, the like, oh, we think the ideals are great, but what we see, like the criticism that I got from a lot of people direct, I mean, they weren't criticizing me, but if they see an American, they're like, we're going to tell you what we think about America. Right. And I heard a lot, and I agree with this, is the ideals and the principles sound great, but like what we actually see happening, or like the leadership, like the qualities of political leaders, how they carry themselves and the policies of support, like this, like something's not matching up. And the one that I'm probably the, I mean, obviously most is close to me now, was I feel so fortunate. So my company paid partial maternity leave. It was like 60% for 6 weeks. And then I had some short-term disability and we had some savings. We kind of cobbled together this, like, I got to stay home for 3 months. Like that's what we could afford to do. And I could still come back to my job. And I was just like, yes, I'm so grateful. And then you look around at how the rest of the world does it. And we had to like scrape by to make that happen. And that they're, like in terms of supporting family values, like letting parents stay home to bond and take care of the kids in the early years, and to see that like that we can't get that together in the United States is really frustrating to me, because I also think supporting families is really important. And I see some of these, like, it's like, oh, those are left-wing policies, so we don't, like, that's like, no, that's a family supporting policy. And I it's and that has personally affected me of like, man, wouldn't it have been nice to stay home for half a year or a year and get to really have that bonding and financial stability and not doing breastfeeding crap all day at work, you know?
I know. Yes.
It's like, man, that's a policy that would have, that would support my family and people I know. And so I totally agree with like family support, and I get frustrated when it's like, oh, that's a right side policy or a left side policy, and instead of evaluating like how it will actually impact us.
Oh, I so agree. That's a great point. I was born in the summer. I know my mom stayed home until, I mean, August, until she had to go back to school. I don't think she had much time at all. So what are your hopes and fears for our country?
I think my biggest fear is, I mean, and I'm sure Bentonville is like this too, in Arkansas, like I'm sure at the local state levels, it gets the same way, but I fear this, like the clinging to power being, getting put as more important than the actual policies that get put in place. And I do think it's interesting that she described this like, oh, people who are at the really far ends of the spectrum don't come to talk to each other, but it's the people who are the really far ends of the spectrum that are good at getting elected to positions. And it's like you watch that get worse locally. Like locally, local involvement is so refreshing because you're like, oh, like you registered as this, but then you talk like my city councilman or whatever that I know personally, like, but then you talk to him and he kind of mixes both of these. And I just, the bigger the scale of government, you don't see that. Or if you do, it's like behind closed doors, or like this kind of like, there's only this side or that side. I think the two party like diverging is what I am the most afraid of. And I got to witness one, it's like the equivalent of a state government for the area I was living in Spain. And you go to their like capital, the political offices, and it's like, there were like six or seven parties that were, you know, sharing power at the time. And it's these five people here and these five people, these 10 people here, and the majority has 20. And how they, I mean, it's just this like crisscross web, you know, rather than two sides kind of negotiating my way or your way. I feel like a more, like a wider diversity of parties forces you to like dig into nuance a little bit more. And I just get scared that we have a system that's set up to like just forget nuance.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And cover the, you know, go for policies or leaders to get elected that are really going to hold the seat.
Yeah.
Instead of doing the work that's really going to impact our families or us individually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. I teach junior high art, and we still say the Pledge of Allegiance every morning. And I have about six kids who just don't stand for it, don't say it, which I came from elementary, and kids just proudly stood and, you know, put their hand up. They're very much into it. They just want to please. But then you get to junior high and people have an opinion. And so I kept seeing this, you know, morning after morning, that they just will not stand. And I've been thinking, you know, what is it that you don't support? You know, I want to ask that, but I can't, but, I want to ask, what is it that you don't support? So instead, I decided to do this 3-week project with them where each student had to research another country, not USA or Mexico, and give a report, plus, you know, tell about the art and the artists, and then present an art lesson. And we have found that most countries are dictatorships, and a lot of countries control the internet and control your freedom of speech and control your job and control you know, where, if you leave the country and if you can come back, and just so controlling. And I was hoping that through this process, many of them would see, you know, there's a lot of reason to stand for this flag and for the people who fought for this country, that we have a lot of freedoms. I get to choose whether, whether I go to church, whether my kids go, whether I decide not to. And I mean, I get to choose to wear jeans on Friday. You know what I mean? Just, there's a, we have a lot of choice, I think, and I can move to another state, and I can, you know, just whatever. There's just so many choices that these other people in other countries don't have. And so I'm hoping that through this, they'll just get a more global view and see there's a lot going on here to be proud of. And, but I do think that this generation doesn't have a background on the history of our country and what we've gone through. I mean, I think that my grandpa, he just passed, and he was 102 years old. And, you know, he fought in the Navy. And so I had his perspective, but these kids don't have a perspective from someone in their family, or they're not even close to family. They're estranged from family. It's, everybody's so separate. So I think there's a big gap in our, I don't know, I guess,
yeah,
pride in our country.
Yeah. I was really surprised. So I coach, they're mostly 14 now, but I've had a lot since they were younger, and was shocked, you know, when somebody gives you the blurb of when 9/11 happened, they weren't even a thought, you know, yeah. Like that the world they've grown up in, like what their perspective of war is, almost doesn't make any sense if you compare it to like me listening to my grandpa talk about fighting in World War II, you know, because World War II was like, there's a clear enemy, you can identify them, they're probably wearing a specific uniform, like that, even just what war is and what enemies are and aren't, like now it's kind of vague and unknown, and or it morphs over time. It's not just, you know, the redcoats line up and the colonists line up, and it's that they don't know anything other than just kind of ongoing fighting, and it's big here and then small here and then big over here, and now it's like they don't, that it's kind of a norm of life, and they're sort of desensitized to it. And I think I've got to be like the last generation of people that was like, you read about it in a newspaper versus like, yeah, it's in front of you on in an email newsletter or Twitter or whatever every day. Mm-hmm. And I, when you asked about fears, that's probably one of my biggest fears too, is, and that, this isn't just the United States, like, are we getting to a place where agreeing upon facts, like that, what, you know, what things are true. You know, you get one photo from a war zone by this outlet that says this caption, and the caption from this outlet is totally different. Like that, it's, I can see how growing up in that, it's so hard. And even living in it now as an adult, like, it's hard to filter through. So if you sit down and have a conversation with somebody about what the history was, even that's hard to point to, because it's really, it's source driven. Like this, the truth has become very, it's not really a fixed thing. I think there's positives to that, right? Like I think some of that is uncovering truths that maybe were hidden over time. Like American history has plenty of those, right? Where it's, you know, the narrative for a while was this, and as we, you know, as the Civil Rights Act gets put in place, and as we grant equal marriage rights, like some of these things get put in place, and we kind of look back on history differently. But I think knowing that the facts of history or what's happening in the world are sort of, they're not as black and white anymore, that's scary too.
Yeah, you're right. I agree. So on the flip side, what would be your hope for our future?
I don't know.
Well, I'm based on what you said, those are similar fears that I have. And I don't know if you feel the same way, but I'm just hoping that somehow our country just realizes the importance of family and that family structure, and that how that's going to be the basis of our education system, our work system, and you know, I would like to see some programs to support that. Like you said, that was really interesting that you had to scrimp and save to get to stay home for that amount of time that you had. And that's super important. You're forming the next generation. I'm just grandma now. Did you say your daughter was 9 months old?
Yeah, she's almost 9 months.
Yeah. Yeah, so my granddaughter is like 10 months old, and I'm just like, this is so fun. I love it. And you're in like the best, you're in a really great time right now. Is she taking steps or traveling?
So my husband and I are about to go on our first trip without her, and I think she will start crawling while we're gone.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Well, so it'll be a dramatic week, I'm sure.
Well, congratulations on your baby.
Do you have other family members, your kids or your spouse or people that you're close to that have beliefs that are pretty different from yours?
Yes. One of my teacher friends, we're close, and yes, very different political beliefs, opposite ends of the spectrum. Supports open borders, supports just all the different layers of what family means. And so we spend a lot of time together and we have a good time, but we can't touch on those subjects very well. We respect each other, but we just don't dig too deep. Yeah. How about you?
My husband's family has been fascinating. Like, you don't really think much about your family until you get married, and then now you're a part of another one. And my husband's family is more homogenous. Like, everybody's kind of on the same, you know, they're probably just like, they're slightly right of center, you know, all Christian as the formation of all of that. And then my family, I don't know how this happened, but it's like, my brother's here, my sister's here, I'm there, stepdad's here, mom's here, like, her siblings are there. And my husband's family, nonstop, like, every time we get together, it's political conversations, faith conversations, but I get, as somebody who's, like, a little bit out, like, I don't always line up exactly with what they believe, but I am outspoken, so I'm going to participate.
Okay.
It feels like that's easy for them to do, because like, it's easy for them to talk about because it flows, you know, there's not a lot of tension. It's like, oh yeah, I believe this. Oh yeah. Well, it's basically the same. And my family is like, we just kind of avoid it. We like, you poke fun at somebody for, you know, whatever one thing or whatever show, you know, whatever podcast they like, but otherwise we kind of avoid it and don't like, people that I know everything about, almost except for that, because I think we're scared of hurting each other. Mm-hmm. And I wish we could, like, not hurt each other, but I wish we could open up some of those topics more, but it's just hard to even broach the subject. And so my husband's from Texas, so we come back from Texas, and it's like, man, we just talked about Jesus or the church the whole week, and I loved it. It's like, this is fascinating, but I don't feel like we got very far. And I don't know. I have these kind of two buckets that it's like, I wish each one had a little bit more of the other, you know, one had a little more tact and a little more mix up.
Yeah.
And the other ones felt a little more open.
Well, I don't have to deal with that so much, but even with my own mother, though, I'm probably the different one in the family. My family was pretty much, or my mom and dad both have their own way of doing things. And I sort of didn't find an answer there. So I went towards Christianity and gravitated towards that in my friend group and in my, in college, joining ministries and going on mission trips and things like that. I just really dove into that and loved it. And so, I really didn't give my kids too much choice. I was just like, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and show you what I found. You know, I respect your decision. I gave them a choice when they were like 10. I was like, hey, this is where I'm at. And they were like, Mom, we were 10. What is this? Yeah. And I was like, well, I just want to train you whatever you want to do. But I'm saying this is where I'm at. And, you know, they felt like they had a choice at least because I gave them the option.
Yeah.
So it's
been it was like we went to church every Sunday. Everything in my household revolved around faith. And today I'm really, really thankful for that. Like basically as I've grown up and have the big questions hit of like, is God real? Is God good? What if we believe, you know, if we're followers of Jesus, how should we act in the world? When those big questions hit, like, I have a lot to go back to. I have been in scripture a lot and in a lot of faith-based conversations. And it's still hard though, when you come to different answers to those questions, like, than the person that raised you. Like, my mom has kind of gotten more conservative as I've gotten older, and I have, like, I've come to conclusions about, like, oh, if we're going to live like Jesus, that means that I want my tax dollars to go to support the poor, which I think is a fair and, like, that's a good interpretation of, you know, what that looks like. And so I'm really glad that I have that, like, strong faith background, but that I was able to, like, reinterpret it through my own experiences as I've grown up. And I know a lot of people, like, hit those questions and they're like, throw it in the trash.
Yeah.
And I really give my mom a lot of credit for that, for, like, you know, giving the, like that my relationship with God is firm enough to, like, handle these questions and changing answers. Because that's the small stuff, not really the big stuff.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you had a lot of
big stuff was really confirmed, like, through those years. So we're wrestling with that now with our own kid. It's like, man, how do you, like, what faith teachings do you start with? I don't have a good answer for that yet, but I'm really grateful for the faith raising that I got.
But I would say most of my decisions about church were based upon where are my kids happiest, where is the best program. And I mean, even I appreciate churches that really put a lot of effort into that. So, but it sounds like you have a lot of diversity around you and a lot of opportunity to stand up for your beliefs and also gain empathy for those on an opposite side of you. So that's cool too, that you're not just, you know, in one little bubble, you're out there getting different perspectives. And I think that's awesome too, just to keep a, I don't know, keep a wide worldview of what's going on. So just from this whole experience, what's something that you would take with you?
An hour is long enough.
Yeah.
Like, I think we could have talked for a lot longer. Like, you can feel how, as we've gotten further into it, we get comfortable and, like, a little more of the real stuff comes out.
Yeah.
And I wish we would have had more time together, but I think that says a lot about, I mean, if we're sitting here asking questions about, oh, how do we talk to people that are different from us? It's like, you're going to have to take, like, it's not just going to be an hour over dinner on the weekend. dad.
That's true.
Like we're gonna have to do it a few times. Yeah, because even though we're strangers and we could just walk away, like we could have said anything.
That's true.
And we still, like, with this whole like respect foundation, we still kind of like slowed into it, and you're like, oh man, we're just starting to get good.
Yeah.
What about you?
I'm really impressed by you. You're a career woman, and you're in your 20s, and you're an architect, and you're a mother, and you've got so much ahead of you. I'm impressed. I think that's exciting. And also, I feel like you've got a great foundation, and I'm excited for your daughter. She's going to grow up in a loving home. And as a teacher, I love to see that, because then you don't have all those obstacles when you're just trying to get through junior high school. You know, you have a great family around you and a good support base. And it sounds like it's a great environment. You got families on both sides that love you and pour into you and spend time with you. And I mean, that's all you can ask for. Looking back over my last 20 years, those are things that are most important. Now I'm, you know, nearing 50, and I'm glad I didn't make any decisions that would have put any rift in that family experience. I mean, that's the most important thing to me.
I also think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, my hunch is that you're doing kind of what I've been doing too, of like her description of the, like, I feel like we both kind of moderated while we get to know each other and then expand, like, and kind of lean back on this, like, the connection point, like, if our connection point has kind of been, you know, like, a real love for our family, and it's like that those are the things that made this a productive conversation.
Yeah, you're right.
I think that's a good I think that's a good lesson to take into others, because I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you. I did too. It was awesome.